Okay, let's start. So, I have been asked to say a few words about walking meditation, first of all.
And it's
nice to have this combination between walking and sitting, because sometimes if you sit for a long time, you get a bit stiff, or you get a bit sore, or whatever. So it's nice to have this combination between walking and sitting here.
Un ir labi, ja mēs varam pāriet no viena meditācijas veidu uz otru, proti, no sēdēšanas uz staigāšanu, jo reizēm, ja mēs ilgi sēžam, mēs kļūstam tāds tīvi.
Okay, so how should you do walking meditation? And the answer to that question is, there isn't any particular way. There's many different ways. And the ways to decide how you should do it depends on how you feel, depends on your mind state.
Un ir daudz un dažādi veidi, kā veikt staigāšanas meditāciju, nav tāds viens konkrēts un vienīgais. Un tas veids, kā mēs varam izvēlēties staigāšanas meditācijas metodi, ir atkarīgs no mūsu prāta stāvokļa.
So the idea is always, that you want to develop the mind, right? You want to move the mind in a certain direction, towards more peace, towards something positive. And that is what you have to remember. It's always about where you want to go, and depending on where you want to go, that decides the action which is right.
Un tas pamats, uz kā mums jāatbalstās, ir zināt, kādā veidā mēs vēlamies prātu attīstīt, un ja mēs to zinām, tad attiecīgi mēs varam izvēlēties metodi.
So if you are having success in your meditation, things are going well, you're feeling nice and peaceful, then the good way of doing walking meditation is to focus on the soles of your feet as you're walking.
Ja mēs sekmīgi attīstam savu meditācijas praksi, mums viss pietiekoši labi izdodas, mēs esam jau sasniegumši pietiekoši mieru līmeni, tad staigāšanas meditācijā mēs varam fokusēties uz sajūtām, kas parādās staigājot pēdās.
So what you do in that case, you find a nice spot for yourself, a nice, flat, quite even area, and there's lots of very nice places around here. And you measure maybe up about 25 to 30 paces.
Un tas, ko mēs daram, ir izvēlamies kādu pietiekošu līdzenu, jauku vietu staigāšanai, un tādas šajā apkārtnē ir gan daudz, un nomērām attālumu, teiksim, 25 soļu plus minus garumā.
And then you have a clear start point, and you have a clear end point, maybe between two trees or between whatever, but you have a fairly clearly defined path.
Un tad mēs izvēlamies sākuma punktu un beigu punktu. Tas var būt starp diviem kokiem, vai arī mēs varam citādi iezīmēt, bet šiem sākuma un beigu punktam būtiem būtu skaidrs atskatām.
And then you start on one end, and you just start walking to the other end. And when you come to the other end, all you do is just turn around and you walk back again. And the way to do that walking, which I think is the best way, is just to walk at the natural pace, whatever that is.
Un tad jūs no šī nospraustā sākuma punkta vienkārši staigājat līdz beigu punktam, tad apgriežaties un atkal staigājat un tā turp un atpakaļ. Un tas ātrums, ar kādu jūs soļojat, ir, manuprāt, tam ir jābūt tam dabīgajam ātrumam, kādā jūs staigājat parasti.
And the reason you want to walk the natural pace is because when it's natural, then there's no force involved. It feels easy, it feels nice, and then the calming happens by itself, and there's no force.
Un tas iemesls, kāpēc es jūs varu izvēlēties parasto iešanas ātrumu, ir tāds, ka tad mēs nejūtam nekādu spiedienu sajūtu, nekādu pienākumu iet lēnāk vai iet ātrāk, un attiecīgi nomierināšanās notiek dabisku un brīvi.
And then you place the attention on the feet. So you feel the foot all the way. You know, you feel the foot when it touches the ground. And then you feel the foot moving forward. You feel the second foot lifting up, touching the ground. And you feel the motion in your feet as you move along, step by step.
Un tad mēs koncentrējamies uz tām sajūtām, kas parādās prādā, kad mēs sākam to likt pie zemes, kad mēs pieliekam to pilnībā, tad kā ir paceļās, un attiecīgi otra kāja veic šādu pašu ceļu, mēs sajūtam kustību, un tā visu laiku izjūtam to.
And this, if that works out, if you can do that, if you're able to do that in a peaceful way, it can be a very peaceful and beautiful feeling just to do that.
Un, ja mums izdodas to veikt tādā mierīgā, nosvērtā prāta stāvoklī, tad mūsos var rasties tāda patīkama iekšēja sajūta.
But sometimes you don't want to do that. Sometimes you have been sitting in here and you feel perhaps that you know, it hasn't been going so well, perhaps you feel a bit restless or whatever. And if you feel a bit restless, or maybe you have some pain in the body, or things aren't right, then this type of walking meditation may not be the right thing to do.
Bet, ja mums sēdēšanas meditācijā neveiks tik labi, ja mēs jūtamies nemierīgi, ja mūs ķermenī ir sāpes, tad šāda veida sēdēšanas meditācija var tik labi nestrādāt.
So sometimes you can, there's many things you can do. One thing you can do is just, it doesn't really have to be walking meditation. Sometimes you can just walk outside and just enjoy yourself, you know, feel, look up in the sky, see the blue sky, just enjoy the peace. It's very nice and peaceful here, right? Just enjoy that peace. Walk around, look at the, this morning I saw some ducks over here in the pond. So just enjoy watching the ducks, right? Something nice, something which makes you feel good and peaceful and happy here.
Nevis veikšu šo formālo staigāšanas meditāciju, bet vienkārši iziet ārā un baudīt šos skaistos namas skatus, skaņas, gaisu un tā tālāk. Piemēram, šorīt es izgāju ārā un Metālajā Dīķītī redzēju pīvis, un tad, ja mēs varam vienkārši ļaut, lai šī patīkamā skaistā vide iedarbojas uz mums un nomierina.
And you know it's right, you know it is right. If you feel at ease, and you feel relaxed, and you feel it's nice, you feel it's beautiful, then you know you're doing the right thing. Yeah.
Un, ja mēs jūtam tādu patīkamu, brīvu, iekšēju siltu atlaumumu sajūtu, tad mēs zinām, ka mēs dodamies pareizā virzienā.
Or if you, another thing you can do in walking meditation, I will talk more about this later on, is metta, like loving-kindness meditation.
Vēl viena lieta, ko jūs varat veikt staigāšanas meditācijas laikā ir metta, jeb mīlošās nostības meditācija.
So this metta meditation is the way of using your mind, of seeing the good aspects in another person or other people. And this you can do either when sitting or when walking.
Un metas meditācija palīdz ieraudzīt skaisto otrā cilvēkā vērtīgo labo, un to var veikt gan staigājot, gan arī sēžot.
Another thing you can do when you do walking meditation is just to contemplate something. When we do these kind of sutra readings, often they are maybe things you want to think about a little bit. And you can reflect on these things in walking meditation. A very important part of the Buddha's teachings is actually to reflect on those teachings. So they sink in, so you get a deeper understanding of them. And walking meditation is very good for this.
Vēl viena lieta, ko mēs varam darīt staigāšanas meditācijas laikā, ir pārdomāt tās mācības, ko mēs esam noklausījušies, saņēmuši, un ļaut mūsos tam nosēsties, un patiesībā diezgan liela, būtiska Buddhas mācības daļa ir veltīta tieši šim pārdomājam, kad mēs šīs mācības iekšķīgojam.
So basically you have to decide for yourself. It's up to you and you have to not try to know yourself, understand what you need. So you're taking like responsibility for your own practice. If you just follow a strict regime, this is how you do it, then sometimes it may not be right for you, right? But if you're able to learn to understand yourself, understand your mind, understand your heart, understand what you need, and then when you understand that, then you can always apply the right thing for the right time.
Un tādēļ mums arī jāiemācās saprast un atpazīt, kas ir labākais priekš mums, un jāuzņemās pašiem atbildību, kas mums varētu būt vislabākais, jo, ja mēs vienkārši sekojam kādam stingram režīmam, tas var nebūt tas piemērotākais konkrētajā mūsu gadījumā, tāpēc mums ir jāspēj saprast, kas vislabāk darbosies priekš mums pašiem.
Okay, so if you have any more questions about walking meditation, you can write them down, and then this evening we can try to answer them at that point.
Un, ja rodas atkal jautājumu par staigāšanas meditāciju, tad jūs tos varat pierakstīt un centīsimies šī vakarā kārstiem atbildēt.
Okay, so let us return to the sutta that we're working on then. Okay. So what we are looking at is how to purify the mind stage by stage.
Tātad mēs raugāmies, kā prāts soli pa solim attīrīt.
And so far we have been talking about purifying, first of all, of the coarse defilements, like defilements of speech, defilements of action, but also defilements of the mind.
Tātad mēs šim runājām par rupjajiem piesārņojiem attīrīšanas veidiem, tātad par ķermeni un runu, bet tālāk arī par prāta attīrīšanu.
And the defilements of the mind, they are defined here as three types of defilements. It's the defilement of, called here, sensual thoughts. And then you have the thoughts of ill will. And the thoughts of harming are the three types mentioned here.
Un tad tas ir ienomīgs trījās daļās domas, kas ir saistīts ar piecām maņām. Nelabīgas domas un ļaunas domas.
And sensual thought is any thought that has to do with the five senses, right? Anything, if you have any kind of desire, any kind of longing, anything to do with the five senses, food, or you want to go and see a movie, or anything which relates to the five senses, even if you just have a pain in the leg, and you know you can't get your mind off that, that is also a sensual thought.
Tas, ko mēs dalīgi varam iedomāties, protams, domas par ēdienu, vēl noskatīties kādu filmu, vai pat vienkārši sāpes kājām. Tas viss attiecās uz šīm domām, kas saistīts ar piecām maņām.
So it's quite profound. It's not kind of just a coarse or strong desires. It goes down to very, very refined levels, this idea of sensual thoughts. So there's this gradual progression, like we're talking about before, gradual understanding of reduction, stage by stage by stage.
Un nav tā, ka šīs vēlmes vai domas ir tikai rupjā līmenī, tās katrā nākošajā līmenī paliek arvien smalkākas un netika viegli pamanāmas.
And it's precisely for this reason. Some of you may be familiar with a well-known sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya called the Satipatthana Sutta. And it's that sutta, it talks about understanding the defilements, understanding the hindrances. And it's precisely because they are so often so refined, because they come in so many levels, that it's actually necessary to contemplate them and understand them, to be able to give them up stage by stage.
Un varbūt daži no jums būs pazīstami ar slavēnu sutu no Majjhima Nikājas, proti Satipatthana sutu. Un tur tieši tiek runāts par ļoti pakāpenisku attīrīšanu posmu pa posmu.
So this practice you're seeing here is like twofold practice, a practice which always goes together. It's called samatha on the one side, samatha which is calm, and vipassana which is like clarity, if you like, on the other side. And this always has to come together, because when you have clarity, you understand what's going on, you can abandon the defilements. And when you abandon the defilements, then the calm, the samatha comes afterwards. They come together like this, stage by stage.
Un tāpēc ir ļoti svarīgi, lai ambas prakses, proti samata un vipassana, iet roku rokā, proti samata ir šī prāta nomierināšanas daļa, un vipassana ir spēja skaidri saprast un sarunzēt, kas notiek, un tāpēc nepieciešam šī ārdalēm varētu virzīties ar katru nākošo solu tālāk.
So maybe just talk briefly about ill will as well. Ill will, vyapada in Pali. This is again any kind of negative thought you have towards any other person or anything whatsoever. It can be very strong anger to kind of very slight irritation or very slight negativity in the mind.
Un tad runāt par to, kas ir saprast ar nelabvēlīgajām domām, tas var būt jiem kas no lielām dusmām līdz sīka aizkaitinājuma par kādu.
And this can also be very, very refined, right? And because it is so refined, some of this ill will, you may not actually realize it's there because it's so refined. Maybe it's a slight aversion or negativity or something which may be so habitual you can't see it. And that's why, again, it's the understanding of this is very important. And only then, as you understand it, gradually, gradually, you can give it up.
Un dažs no šīm nelabvēlīgajiem domām ir tik smalks, ka mēs tās pat nevaram uztvert mums tās piemīt, jo mēs esam arī pie tām ļoti pieraduši, un tāpēc ir svarīgi šī virzīšanās no rupjākiem līmeniem, līmeņiem līdz smalkākiem, lai mēs varētu brīvoties no visu liekā.
The way that you know that there is no ill will there is if metta, if love towards others comes quite easy, then of course there is no ill will there. Yeah.
Un pazīme, ka mūsos nav nekādas nelabvēlīgas domas, ir tad, ja mūsos dabiski un brīvi pret ikvienu rodas metien šī mīlošā labestība.
And the last one here of these three thoughts is the idea of harming. This is vihingsa in Pali. And the idea of harming here means that you don't really care about others. You don't have any consideration for other people or animals. It's like you have a cold heart in a sense.
Un daudz domas apzīmē to stāvokli, kad mums nemaz nerūp citas būtnes un faktiski mums jūs ir tāda augsta nejūtīga sirds.
So you might be called ruthless, right? Ruthless, like in business life, you're ruthless. You don't really care what happens to other people. You just do things because you want to earn money or you want to get the promotion. So you don't actually think about the harm or the consequences of your actions. You're cold towards other people.
Un tad mēs esam tādi nejūtīgi, augstasinīgi, vai kā biznesa vidē mēs esam gatavi pāri līķiem, lai tikai sasniegt to, ko gribam paši, nemaz nedomājot par citiem.
I don't know if you know this, but the word Ruth in English, the name Ruth as well, it actually means compassion, right? That's what it actually means. So ruthless means not having compassion, quite literally.
Un tas konkrētais vārds, kas te tiek izmantots angļu valodā, saknojas vārdā līdzjūtība, un attiecīgi šeit tas nozīmē līdzjūtības nesamību.
So the opposite of harming here is compassion, developing compassion, developing that sensitivity towards others.
Tātad ļaunuma pieskaņa pretstats būtu līdzjūtība, jūtības sirds radīšana.
Okay, so that is the two first aspects here, the gradual refinement. So with this you overcome most of the problems, most of the hindrances, most of the things which are going to be the kind of course obstacles to meditation practice.
Tātad šī ir divi pirmie punkti, kas tiek aprakstīti un kurus pārvarot, mēs būsim tikuši vaļā no lielākajiem šķēršļiem praksē.
And the next thing here, these are now becoming very kind of refined defilements. The next thing here that you abandon are the thoughts about your relations, like family, right? Your country or region perhaps, and about your reputation.
Un tam tālāk no paliem tam smalkāk piestādinām proti domas par radiniekiem, par ģimeni, par savu valsti un domas par savu reputāciju.
And you will probably notice that these things about your relations, about your country and the reputation, this is about who you are, right? This is about your identity as a person, what you take to be you, yourself.
Un tātad mēs pamanām, ka tas viss, mūsu attiecības, piedarība valsti, mūsu reputācija, grozās ap mūsu esesajūtu.
You know, when we think about who we are, we think about, okay, I'm from Latvia, I'm from Norway, I'm from Australia, I'm from wherever. This is how we identify ourselves. And then we identify with that culture, with that language, with that history. And this is how we become somebody, how you become a person.
Un mēs varam sevi definēt kā latvietis, norvēģis, austrālietis, tad mēs tālāk identificējam sevi ar šīs konkrētās valsts kultūru, un tādējādi mēs sevi definējam kā personu.
Or your family, your relations, right? I come from such and such a family that maybe they're wealthy, or maybe it's high social status, or maybe it is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. All these kind of things also are kind of identity markers.
Un tāpat es varu nākt no tāds un tāds, mēs varbūt man ir tāds un tāds sociālais status, un nākal tas ir veiks, kā mēs gribam sevi identificēt.
Yeah. And of course reputation is the same thing. Yeah. Your reputation is also about the similar kind of things, you know, education that you have, position that you have in the company, you know, how people look at you, all of these things are also again to do with identity, who you are as a person. Yeah.
Un reputācija ir saistīta ar tādām lietām, kā, piemēram, izglītība vai amats, ko mēs ieņemam. Un atkal tas ir tas, ko mēs bieži izmantojam identitātes veidošanā.
And because this has to do with identity, because it has to do with who you are, you tend to attach to these things.
Un tā kā tas viss ir saistīts ar mūsu identitāti, mums ir tendence tam visam pieķerties.
And because you're attached to them, there is desire involved. And wherever there is desire and attachment, these are things you will tend to think about because you have an involvement, you have an interest in these things.
Un tā kā tur ir pieķeršanās, tur ir arī vēlmes, un tur, kur ir kopā pieķeršanās un vēlmes, pie tā turpina atkal atgriezties mūsu domas.
So the sense of self, it gives rise to thinking, because it's almost like you have to defend this idea of who you are. And so that's why if you feel threatened in any way, if you feel ill at ease or whatever, then if that sense of self gets some kind of threat, then you will tend to think these things to kind of restore that sense of identity.
Un tādējādi faktiski mēs, ja mēs jūtam, ka mūsu identitāte kaut kādā veidā tiek apdraudēta, tad mēs atkal un atkal atgriežamies un mēģinām domāt, kā šo identitāti aizstāvēt, un visu laiku domājam par to.
So when you meditate and you start to become peaceful, right? It's almost like your identity is disappearing. It's like you become very peaceful, no thinking going on. It's like your sense of self is slowly disappearing. And because it's disappearing, it's easy for that sense of self to like reassert itself. You want to exist. So these kind of thinking then come up in the mind.
Un kad mēs sākam meditācijas laikā arvien vairāk norimt, mūsu prāts paliek arvien vairāk mierīgs, tad mūsu šai es izjūtā identitātei rodas tāda trauksmes sajūta, jo šķiet, ka tā sāk mazināties un izšķīst, un tāpēc tā sāk spēcīgi par sevi ziņu.
But then, so then gradually, as your meditation works, you start to give these things up. And you actually find it's so nice not to have any country, right? Who cares if we are Latvian or Norwegian or Australian? Well, you know, you are human. And as a human being, we are, deep down, on the surface there are differences, but deep down, it is very, very much the same wherever you go in the world.
Bet ja mūsu meditācijas praksa progresē pareizā virzienā, tad mēs sākam neuztraukties par to, ko tas, kas iepriekš mums bija nozīmīgs, kā piemēram, kurai valstī mēs piederam un tam līdzīgi, jo tas ir otršķirīgi, tas, kas ir zināms, ka mēs esam cilvēku, un tas, ka mēs esam cilvēki, ir tas tā būtiskā pazīme un daudz svarīgāk.
So it's very nice when you give up the sense of identity. It's very nice because you take away the barriers between people. You just are a person just like everybody else. And it makes it easier to understand others. It makes it easier to have compassion. It makes it easier to have metta and all these other things at the same time.
Un kad ir izdušies mūsu identitātes nosprāstās robežas, tad ir daudz vieglāk sajust sevi kā daļu no plašākas kopienas, sajust vairāk līdzjūtību un tā tālāk.
You notice one of the interesting things, you notice when you see there is a war going on somewhere. If there's a war going on somewhere, usually the first thing that the government or the military will try to tell you, they'll try to make you understand that the opposition, the enemy, is not quite human. They're somehow a bit less than human, right?
Un nedat mēs varam redzēt, ka tajos gadījumos, ka notiek kardarbība, tās valsts vadošie cilvēki vēlēsies uzsvert, ka tā otra puse nav tik ļoti cilvēcīga, ka viņi ir kaut kādā veidā mazāk vērtīgi.
It's quite bad, but this is kind of how things usually work. As long as you have the sense that the enemy is somehow different from you, somehow has less value, somehow is different, then it's much easier to have anger. And this, of course, is part of this whole thing of wars and all these kind of things. It's a sense of identity, opposition, differentness, etc.
Un tādējādi tā doma, ka ienaidnieks ir kaut kādā ziņā mazāk vērtīgs par mums pašiem, tas padara to karu kā attaisnojumāku, kas nebūtu nav labi. Te mēs varam redzēt, kādās galējībās var ievest šī es izjūta.
So as that sense of identity decreases, as you no longer identify so much, it's again easier to become peaceful and calm. There's no sense of self inside that you have to protect or you have to look after. You're quite happy just to be peaceful.
Un kad šī identitāte mazinās, tad mums ir daudz vieglāk sasniegt mieru, jo mums nav visu laiku kaut kas jāaizstāv un jāsaglabā.
Okay, so now things are going very, very well. I should actually, there's one more thing I should talk about here before I go any further, because one of the interesting things here is the way it talks about how to actually overcome these things. It says an earnest and capable bhikkhu, he abandons, dispels, terminates and obliterates all these defilements.
Un vēl viena interesanta lieta, pirms un dodos tālāk, ir tas veids, kā tiek formulēts, ko mūks dara šo visu, prot nopietnas un spējas mūks tās atmet, izkliedē, izbeidz un iznīcina.
So the first thing here you notice is this idea of earnest and capable.
Tātad te tiek izmantot vārdi nopietnas, jeb godīgs un spējīgs mūks.
So this, what this means is that if you're going to have success on the spiritual path, it's like if you want to have success in anything in life, you have to apply yourself, right? You have to persevere. You have to keep going. You have to really want it. And then, when you have that sense of perseverance, then eventually you will succeed.
Un tātad, vai mēs kaut ko sasniegt, mums ir nepieciekams tam pieeja ar apņēmību, nopietni, vai mums varētu beigties.
Sometimes people think that, you know, getting into deep meditation is difficult. But difficult is not the right word. It's not difficult in the way that, you know, mathematics might be difficult or something like that. It just takes a lot of commitment, and that's why it is hard.
Un reizēm cilvēkiem šķiet, ka nokļūt pie dziļākiem meditācijas stāvokļiem ir grūti vai sarežģīti, bet tas nav tik grūti vai sarežģīti kā matemātika. Ir vienkārši nepieciešama daudz lielāka apņēmība.
So once you have the commitment and once you have the willingness to actually do it, and then you keep investigating, keep asking questions, keep on doing it, then eventually anyone can succeed.
Un ja mums ir šī iekšējā vēlme izpētīt, novērot, kas notiek, tad gal beigās tik vienam tas ir pa spēkam.
So this sense of being earnest and being capable and persevering, this is obviously a very important quality here.
Un tāpēc tad ir uzsvērt šī nopietnā, neapvainīgā pieeja.
And then it has this other words here, this words which seem very strong and very powerful, and this is the idea of that you dispel, abandon, terminate and obliterate these hindrances. What does that mean?
Un tālāk tiek izmantot tādus notaļus pretīgu vārdu, kā izkliedē, atmet, izbeidz un iznīcina.
It's very important to understand this, because this is the sort of thing that can very easily lead to misunderstanding.
Un ir svarīgi arī saprast pareizi, ka šeit tiek teikts, jo tas vienu var novest pie pārpratumiem.
You know, words like terminate and obliterate in English, it has the sense of using willpower, right? Of forcing, you know, gritting your teeth, clenching your fists, and kind of forcing these bad things out of your mind.
Vārdi, tādā vārdā kā izbeidz un iznīcina, var izklausīties, ka ir nepieciešams sakost domas un ar lielu gribas spēku un pūlēm kaut ko ļoti spētīgi darīt.
But actually, when you read the sutras very broadly, I have read the sutras very broadly, very rarely does the Buddha actually talk about using willpower and using force. Using force is something that almost hardly ever recommended by the Buddha.
Bet ja mēs tam visnotaļ plašā apjomā lasījuši Buddhas teikto, un es tas centies to darīt, tad Buddha faktiski ārkārtīgi reti runā par gribas spēka izmantošanu un tādu ļoti lielu spēku pielietošanu.
So this is important, because if you get this wrong, then you know this is why it is important to understand the sutras broadly and to have a deep understanding of them, because then even these things, they're not going to cause you problems. Otherwise you read obliterate and it gets completely the wrong idea.
Tāpēc ir nepieciešams pietiekoši plašas un dziļas zināšanas par sutām, jo pretējā gadījumā mēs varam ielasīt kaut kādu nelielu fragmentu ar tām vārām kā iznīcināt tajā un mums vēl var rasties nepareizs priekšstats.
So what it actually means, what it means to use wisdom and to reflect and to think about these things in the right way. And when you use that wisdom, when you reflect in the right way, that is how these things are obliterated, how they are terminated.
Un tas, ko ir nepieciešams darīt, ir izmantot savu gudrību un ar tās palīdzību atbrīvoties un iznīcināt šīs lietas.
And the reason for that is because wisdom, the idea of wisdom in Pali is it's a very powerful instrument. It is so powerful that if you reflect on something in the right way, it disappears like that.
Un šī gudrība tiek uzsvērta ļoti daudz Pali tekstos, jo tai piemīt milzīgs spēks un ar to koncentrējoties tā faktiski var izšķīdināt lietas kā nebijušas.
Yeah. So this is why it is called obliterate here, because the power of wisdom is to actually terminate and obliterate and make something come to an end straight away.
Un tieši tāpēc tiek lietots vārds iznīcināt, jo gudrības spēkos ir kādu lietu pilnīgi izbeigt.
It is something that you can never do with willpower. Willpower can never really obliterate and terminate something. All willpower can really do is to suppress it, to hold it down.
Un, piemēram, gribas spēkam nekas tāds nav iespējams. Tas, ko var padarīt gribas spēks, ir tikai kaut ko apspiest.
But wisdom can actually make something come to a full stop. It's not about suppressing, it's not about holding it down, it's about actually ending something in a natural way.
Savukārt mudrība kaut ko spēj patiešām līdz galam izbeigt, nevis tikai apspiest vai uz brīdi mazināt.
So how does this work? I will give you some example on how this works, because so far it's a bit abstract.
Un tā kā tik tālu tas varētu šķist mazliet abstrakt, es centīšu pasniegt konkrētu piemēru.
So let's say that you are in a particular situation, you are with a person who you find difficult, and you can see that irritation or anger is just about to arise.
Piemēram, mēs esam situācijā kopā ar kādu cilvēku, kas mūsos izraisa aizkaitinājumu, un mēs spējam pamanīt, ka mūsos tūlīt parādīsies dusmas.
But then you remind yourself, at that moment you remind yourself, is anger actually going to work? Is it going to have the benefit that I want it to have?
Un tajā brīdī mēs varam pārdomāt, vai dusmas sniegs mums to rezultātu, ko mēs vēlamies, vai tās mums sniegs kādu labumu.
And when you have reflected on that enough, when you have used your part of your time in meditation or walking or in daily life to reflect on anger and to understand that basically it doesn't work, then at the moment you remember that is wisdom coming up and it ends that anger straight away.
Un ja mēs esam pietiekoši cīti pārdomājuši, kāda dusma iedarbība un vai tās spēcniek tos rezultātus, ko mēs vēlamies, mēs saprotam, ka dusmas nedos mums to rezultātu, kādu mēs gribam tajā brīdī, un tādējādi mūsos parādās gudrība, kas tiklīdz dusmas parādās, spēj arī uzreiz pielikt tām punktu.
Usually you know what it's like if somebody else makes you angry because they are angry or whatever and you get anger in return, usually it tends to escalate, right? It gets worse.
Jo parasti, ja kāds uz mums sadusmojas, tad mums ir tendence sadusmoties pretī, un tas savukārt izraisa tikai šī konflikta pastiprināšanos.
And through experience like that, after a while, and there will be some nice suttas here later on that show this, after a while you understand that if you want to solve a problem, anger is almost never the solution.
Un ja mēs esam pietiekoši daudz to pārdomājuši un pieredzējuši, tad mēs saprotam, ka dusmas gandrīz vienmēr nav īstais un labākais risinājums.
And when you see that in a deep way, when you understand that, having reflected on it again and again, that is when wisdom is basically there and you're able to let go of that anger straight away.
Un ja mēs esam pietiekoši daudz un ilgstoši par to pārdomājuši, tad mūsos ir radusies gudrība, kas spēj mūs atbrīvot no dusmām tajā brīdī, kad tās parādās.
And it is the same with sensual pleasures as well. Sensual pleasures is a bit more difficult and it's a bit more involved. Anger is more important. But in principle, the same thing applies to sensual pleasures too.
Un līdzīgi tas darbojas arī uz maņu baudām, dusmas varbūt ir iedarbīgākas un svarīgākas, ar ko tik galā, bet tas ir tāpat jāņem vērā arī uz maņu baudām.
Okay, so I'll talk about this more later on because this is actually very important. This is a very kind of central part of the practice of the Dhamma, learning how to reflect in a wise way. And then when you do that, that is how you obliterate, abandon, terminate and dispel this kind of thinking.
Par to es runāšu vēl vēlāk, jo tā ir visnotaļ svarīga Dhammas prakses veids, bet pārdomāt un analizēt un ar tās pārdomāšanas un analizēšanas palīdzību mēs spējam atmest, izklīdēt, izbīt un iznīcināt nevajadzību.
Okay, so now we are moving on to the more refined aspects of abandoning defilements. I was going to continue where I was before. So actually, that's how far we got, wasn't it? So now I need to read again, I think. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so I'll do a bit more reading for you here. Okay. Did we read all the way to the end, or did we not? No, we didn't.
I think that this has been done and the
folks. Okay. Okay, so that's basically we are in the right place. Okay, yeah, okay. So, yeah, so when this has been done, then there remains thoughts connected with the Dhamma. That concentration is not peaceful and sublime, not gained by full tranquilization, not attained to unification, but reined in and checked by forceful suppressing the defilements. But because there comes a time when his mind becomes internally steady, composed, unified and concentrated. That concentration is peaceful and sublime, gained by full tranquilization and attained to unification. It is not reined in and checked by forceful suppressing defilements. Then, there being a suitable basis, he is capable of realizing any state realizable by direct knowledge towards which he might incline his mind.
Kad tas ir izdarīts, viņā paliek domas, kas saistītas ar dāmu. Šī koncentrēšanās nav mierīga un cildana, nav iegūta caur pilnīgu nomierināšanos, nav sasniegusi vienotību, bet ir savaldīta un kontrolēta ar spēku apslāpējot piesārņojumus. Bet tad mūki pienāk laiks, kad viņa prāts kļūst iekšēji nosvērts, mierīgs, vienots un koncentrējies. Šī koncentrēšanās ir mierīga un cildana, iegūta caur pilnīgu nomierināšanos un sasniegusi vienotību. Tā netiek savaldīta un kontrolēta ar spēku apslāpējot piesārņojumus. Tad ir piemērots pamats tam, lai viņš ir spējīgs izprast jebkuru, caur tiešām zināšanām, izprotamu stāvokli, uz kuru viņa prāts varētu slēpties.
Okay, so now we're getting to the very refined stage. What we have seen so far is probably the most important part, because that is the sort of things that most people have to deal with. There are very few people who come to this stage we're talking about now. But it's still good to hear about it and so that you have some idea of what's happening here.
Un tagad mēs esam jau nonākuši pie visnotaļ smalku līmeņu un vairums cilvēku ir tajā posmā, ka viņiem ir jātiem galā ar iepriekš minētajiem, bet tik un tā mums ir labi zināt, kas notiek arī šajos tālākajos posmos.
So when it says here, when all of this is done, basically at this stage your mind is already becoming very pure, right, very bright, and you feel, at this point you're already feeling very good, you may have a lot of nice happiness inside, etc., all these kind of things. But there are still, it says here, there still remain thoughts connected with the Dhamma.
Un tātad šī frāze, kad tas ir izdarīts, tas norādās to stāvokli, kad prāts jau ir ļoti lielā mērā attīrīts. Jau ir pietiekoši spoši, bet tik un tā viņā paliek domas, kas taisīts ar dāmu.
I'm not sure if the translation here is the best one. Thoughts connected with the Dhamma. The Pali word is Dhamma Vitakka. It can be translated in many ways. And my preferred translation is thoughts that accord or thoughts that are in accordance with the Dhamma.
Es neesmu līdz vienam pārliecināts, vai tas vārds, kas tad tiek izvēlēts tulkošanā, ir pats labākais, proti, pat tam, tas viens no variantiem, kas man būtu šķiet piemērotāks, ir domas, kas ir saskaņā ar domu.
Okay, so what this means, a thought which is in a thought connected with the Dhamma could be any thought about the Dhamma, right? But a thought in accordance with the Dhamma means a thought of kindness, a thought of compassion, a thought of metta. These are the thoughts which are in accordance with the Dhamma.
Un tad te varētu būt tādas domas, kas ir saskaņā ar Dhammu, tātad, piemēram, metajiem laiknība,
So the point at this point of meditation is even the good thinking, even the kind of the kind things, even that has to be abandoned at this point.
Un tātad šajā brīdī jau pat laiknās un it kā labvēlīgās domas ir tās, kas kļūst par traucētajiem un jāatmet.
So because, and the reason for that is because you want to still the mind completely, make the mind completely peaceful. Because the more peaceful the mind is, the more rest it is, and the more power it has.
Un tādējādi, ja prāts ir pavisam brīvs no domām, tas ir galēji mierīgs, un, un tam ir lielāks spēks.
So the mind, of course, the very, a very powerful mind is also the mind which you are able to use later on for insight, for understanding, for all these things that ultimately we're trying to achieve in meditation practice.
Un, ja mums ir spēcīgs prāts, un mēs varam sasniegt galējo mudrību un mieru savā meditācijas praksē.
So you put aside even the thinking in accordance with the Dhamma, at this point you put aside, and now you allow the mind instead to unify. It says here that in the next sentence here, as you do this, you allow the mind to become internally steady, composed, unified and concentrated.
Tātad šajā posmā mēs ļaujam prātam kļūt brīvam no visām domām un, kā pēdējā rinko parakstīts, ļoti iekšēji uzvērtam, mierīgam, vienotam un koncentrētam.
So these words here, these words internally steady, composed, unified and concentrated. These are all words that refer to samadhi, to deep meditation.
Un visi šie vārdi, iekšēji nosvērts, mierīgs, vienots un koncentrējies, ir vārdi, kas aprakstā samadhi stāvokli.
So what you're seeing here is the jhanas or samadhi, the very, very deep states of meditation, is what is meant. Again, you can see how you have to be used to reading the suttas to understand that, because it doesn't actually say that. But once you understand the suttas overall, you know that this is what it refers to in this particular case.
Un tātad faktiski šeit ir runāts par jhanām un samadhi, un kaut arī netiek lietoti konkrētie vārdi, ja mēs zinām visu suttu plašo lūku, tad mēs varam skaidri saprast, par ko ir runa.
Yeah, and you will notice also here again, as I mentioned before, it says there comes a time, right? It doesn't say that you choose the time, you don't know when it is. There comes a time. You do the practice, and as you do the practice, this just happens as part of that practice.
Un atkal mēs redzam šo frāzi, tad pienāk laiks, un tad tas saka norāda, ka tas nav kāds noteikts kvantitatīvas daudzums, pēc kura tas parādās, bet tas ir, kā sastāvdēļ, neizbēgam procesā.
And then it says here that this concentration, it says, I'll talk a bit about the word concentration afterwards, but this concentration is peaceful. It's sublime. It's gained by full tranquilization, attained to unification. So these are all like words that give you some idea what samadhi is all about.
Un par koncentrēšanos es pastāstīšu nedaudz vēlāk, bet šeit koncentrēšanās tiek aprakstīta kā mierīga cildana iegūta savu pilnīgu nomierināšanos un sasniegus vienotību, un atkal faktiski tas ir samādi apraksts.
So full tranquilization means that there is no movement anymore, right? When it's not tranquil, there's movement. The mind is going around, it's maybe changing, the object is changing, things are happening. Here it's only one thing happening all the time. That's why it's called full tranquilization.
Un frāze pilnīga nomierināšanās nozīmē, ka prātā vairs nepastāv kaut kāda šaudīšanās vai kustība vai aizmetība ar dažādām lietām. Šeit, šajā stāvoklī ir faktiski viena nemainīga lieta.
And because it's full tranquilization, it's also peaceful, right? You're here getting to the point where things are incredibly peaceful because there's no movement happening anymore. Yes.
Un pilnīga nomierināšanās nozīmē arī pilnīgu mieru stāvokli, ka vairs neparādās kaut kādi traucējoši apstākļi vai kustību.
It is sublime, this word sublime in Pali, panita. In Pali you have the word hina, which means low, and then you have panita, which means like high or sublime. So what you're getting here is something very special, something very kind of wonderful and amazing. That's why it's called sublime.
Un nākošais vārds ir cildena, kas Pali valodā skan panita, un tas apraksta kaut ko tādu ļoti īpašu un augstu.
When the Buddha uses these words, when he says peaceful and tranquil and sublime, the way the Buddha speaks, he speaks in a very kind of, his language is very low key. So when he says the word sublime, it really means special, really, really special, right?
Un Buddha lieto šos vārdus apdomīgi, un ja reiz viņš lieto pilnīgi nomierināšanos, tas arī to nozīmē, un ja tas ir cildens, tas tiešām kaut kas īpašs.
You know, the English people are often said to be understated, right? They kind of say, they don't kind of exaggerate, they're understated. So the Buddha is a bit like an Englishman in this case. He's understated. This is one of the things.
Un līdzīgi, kā mēs zinām, ka angļi parasti lietas izsaka tādā mazinātā formā, es tīvi nepārspīlē. Līdzīgi arī būda šajā pašā mierīgā piezemētā stilā, kā nepārāk spilgtiem vārdiem apzīmē tādas ļoti būtiskas lietas.
So, yeah. Okay, so this is what happens. So this is the very deep depth, the very kind of profundity of these things. And the last thing it says here, which is quite hard to understand, it says that it is not reined in and checked by forcefully suppressing the defilements.
Un tātad nākošā lieta, kas tiek teikt, tas varbūt nav tik viegli saprotami, ir, ka tā netiek savaldīta un kontrolēta ar spēku apslāpējot piesārņojumus.
This is a very strange expression in the Pali. It is like this very long word which has about 40 characters or something. But the most important aspect of this word, it says that it's na sa sankara. And sankara, this word in Pali, is a word that means willpower or force inside of the mind.
Un faktiski tas vārds, kas nāk originālā Pali valodā, sastāv no 40 zīmēm, tā kā tas ir visnotaļ specifisks un garš, bet tas, ko tas būtībā nozīmē, ka netiek izmantots mirs spēks.
So not sa sankara means without sankara. It means without will. That's essentially what it means.
Jā, būtībā bez gribas spēka izmantošanas.
This is one of the ways you recognize this state. That what we're talking about here are the jhanas, possibly the second jhana or maybe more. This is one of the ways you recognize these states, that there's no will there anymore. And this is what it says in here. The will is gone. It's a completely natural state that remains by itself. And there's nothing you can do or you have to do.
Šāds prāts stāvoklis parādās, piemēram, no otrās jhanas un tava, kur vairs neparādās gribas spēka izmantošana, un tad faktiski tas stāvoklis, kas tiek sasniegts, ir labības.
So that is what this sutta then is aiming for. This is the aim of the sutta, to get to this place. And when you get to this place, then it says the next thing it says then, there being a suitable basis, you are capable of realizing anything you wish to realize with direct knowledge.
Un tas ir tas stāvoklis, uz kuru modin nonāk šī sūta, un tad faktiski, kā teikt, tas ir piemēram pamats tam, lai viņš spējas izprast jebkuru caur tiešām zināšanām izprotam stāvokli.
And what that means, the most important thing that that means, is that you are now capable of having insight or having understanding. If you look at your mind at that stage, if you look at your body, particularly the mind, you're able to understand the mind for what it actually is.
Un tas nozīmē, ka mēs spējam būt tādos dziļu ielūkošanos un izpratni gan par prātu, gan arī par ķermeni, par visu, ko mēs vēlamies.
And that is where awakening is possible, right? The word Buddha means awakening. Yeah? This is where you have the chance to see the same things that the Buddha himself saw.
Un tā ir vieta, no kuras ir iespējams pilnīgi atmosties vai ļoti apskaidrotam un tad redzēt to, ko redzēja pats Buddha.
Okay, so that is the Soil Remover Sutta. Just one thing I want to comment on here. It says the word samadhi here is translated as concentration in English.
Tātad šī ir Zeltraķa sutta un vēl mazliet, ko es gribētu piezīmēt, ka samadhi šeit parādījās tekstā kā koncentrēšanās.
But it's important to understand that often in English, I don't know exactly how it works in Latvian, but in English, the word concentration means you using the force to attain something. It's like when you go to the office, for example, on a work day, and you have to read something, or you have to write a report. Often you have to use willpower to be able to do something, which maybe you don't really like to do.
Un to, ko jau fanu samādī, kā koncentrēšanās, tas reizēm var radīt pārpratums, jo angļu valodā, tāpat arī latviešu valodā, koncentrēšanās līdzi sev nes tādu ideju, ka tai obligāti ir jābūt ar zināmu piepūli. Piemēram, mēs aizējam uz darbu un mums ir jākoncentrējas, kas no mums prasa spēku un enerģiju savukārt. Samādī gadījumā tas tā nav.
And you know, when you have to force yourself to do something you don't like, you have to read something you don't want to do, or you have to do something you don't like, you have to force yourself to focus. And after a while, you feel tired, right? After a long day at work or a long day doing something you don't like, you feel tired.
Un, kad mums ir kādu ilgāku laiku jāpiespiež sev darīt un jākoncentrējas uz kaut ko, kas mums nepatīk, mēs sākam justies nokurši.
So that is not what is meant here, because if you focus like that, then instead of actually relaxing and feeling at peace, you feel tired instead.
Un tā no tā koncentrēšanās, par ko ir runāts šajos tekstos, jo tā vietā, lai mēs sasniegtu pilnīgu nomierināšanos, kas ir domāts tekstos, ikdienas dzīvē koncentrējoties, mēs nonākam pie lielāku nogurumu.
So this is a natural concentration. It's a concentration that happens as a consequence of the practice. And what it means, it just means that the mind gets unified, the mind gets together. There's no more movement. That's basically what it means. It's a natural concentration that happens as a consequence of practice, not as a consequence of force.
Un teksta runā par dabisku veidu koncentrēšanos, kas notiek arvien vairāk atslāpstot un kļūstot mierīgākiem, nevis par piespiestu un gribas spēku vadīt koncentrēšanos.
So, okay, so that's an important point, because if you, sometimes it's amazing, you know, if you translate something in one way, it gives one impression. If you translate in a different way, it gives a completely different impression. And then you wonder what is the right way. And sometimes it can lead to big misunderstandings if you misunderstand what is actually meant by these words.
Un tas ir tas, ko es vēlējos pateikt, un jāņem vērā, ka reizēm tulkošana un valoda ir tāda jocīga lieta, ka vienu un to pašu vārdu pārtulkojot nedaudz atšķirīgā veidā, mēs gūstam pilnīgu citu priekšstatu, un tādējādi var pat rasties būtiski pārpratumi.
Okay, so that is the Soil Remover Sutta, and it is quite nice. It's kind of a big framework. When you remember this sutta, you can sort of understand how the Dhamma works. You've got like the big picture now to understand how the Dhamma works from the beginning of the path all the way to the end.
Un tātad šī Zeltraķa sutta sniedz mums tādu lielāku priekšstatu, lielāku bildi, kurā mēs varam saskatīt, kā notiek progress ceļā.
Okay, so the next sutta here is called the shorter discourse on the simile of the elephant's footprint, I think. And this sutta here is, in a way, it is very similar to the previous sutta. It's a similar kind of theme. It shows you the path from the very beginning all the way to the very end.
Un savā ziņā tā ir līdzīga iepriekšējai sutai, jo arī tā līdzībā parāda, kāds ir ceļš no tā sākuma līdz beigām.
The difference is that this one here shows it in much more detail, and it shows, in a sense, what you have to do, how you have to practice, all the way from the beginning, all the way to the end.
Bet atšķirība ir tā, ka šajā sutā tas parādās daudz detalizētākā, izvērstākā veidā, ko ir nepieciešams darīt no prakses sākuma līdz beigām.
And this particular sutta is often known, this particular structure is known as the gradual training in the suttas, in the sense that it's gradual training. It shows you step by step what you actually have to do.
Un šis sutta veids ir pazīstams kā pakāpeniskais treniņš, respektīvi tajā norādīt, kādā veidā mums ir pakāpeniski jāvigrinās un sevi jāvirz.
So this sutta, it begins with a man who has gone and he has met the Buddha, and then on the way back from the Buddha, he meets another person, and then he praises the Buddha to this other person. Oh, the Buddha, what this amazing, amazing man I've just met. He praises the Buddha to this other person.
Un šī sutta starps ar to, ka kāds cilvēks ir pazīsts pie Budas, un atpakaļ ceļā no viņa viņš satiek kādu cilvēku, kuram viņš stāsta par to, cik lielisks bija Buda un cik vērtīgi viņi satika.
And this other man says, well, how come, why are you praising this Buddha so much? What's the reason for all this praise?
Un šis otrs cilvēks viņam prasa, nu, bet kāpēc par viņu tik ļoti slavē?
And the answer he gives, he says that, well, when people go to the Buddha, you know, people who are very sharp, very smart people, very good at talking, etc., when they have a discussion, what happens is that not only do they get persuaded by the Buddha that, you know, the Dhamma is right, the Dhamma is the way to practice, not just that, but often they actually become the disciples of the Buddha, and then they ordain in his teaching.
Tas, ko atbild šis Buddha nesens atkušies vīrs, ir, ka cilvēki, kuri ir ļoti gudru skaidru, tādu ļoti zinoši, un tā tālāk, viņi pēc tikšanās pilnīgi piekrīt Buddhas viedoklim un pat kļūst par viņu mācekļiem.
And then this other man is very impressed when he hears this, because India is always a very kind of, it's a very strong debating culture, everybody debating with each other. And if one person always wins the debate, it must mean that he has something special, right?
Un tad šis otrs cilvēks par to ļoti, no tā, kļūst ļoti iespējams, jo Indijā tombrīd ir ļoti spēcīga nebašu kultūra, un ja kāds spēj visu laiku nepārtraukt pulcēt savu sakotāju skaitu nebašu rezultātā, tas nozīmē, ka viņam ir ļoti spēcīgi argumenti.
And then this man, he goes to the Buddha, and he tells the Buddha the conversation he just had with this other man.
Un tad vīrs dodas pie Budas un atstāst to sarunu, kas tikko ir notikusi.
And of course the Buddha says, well, basically the Buddha says, that's nothing.
Un tas, ko Budas saka, nu, tas īsti neko nav, tas nekas nav.
So, and then the Buddha explains to him what the Dhamma really is about. It's not about winning an argument. It's nice to win an argument if it persuades somebody else and that gives them something good. It's great. But of course, it's much, much more than that.
Buddha saka, ka Dhammas būtība nav nekārši pārliecināt vai uzvarēt. Debatēs Dhammas būtība ir kaut kas daudz vairāk.
And the Buddha uses the simile of the elephant's footprint, and the simile of the elephant's footprint is, if you see something which is which looks like something, then like an elephant's footprint, so when you see an elephant footprint in the wood, you don't straight away assume that this must be a large elephant. What you assume is that you assume, or you know, that this is a large footprint.
Un tādēļ Buda izmanto līdzību ar ziloņu pēdas nospiedumu, jo tad, kad mēs džungļos ieraugām ziloņu pēdas nospiedumu, mēs nevaram uzreiz runāt pie secinājuma, ka to ir atstājis kāds milzīgs zilonis. Viss, ko mēs varam zināt, ir, ka tas ir liels pēdas nospiedums.
And then what you have to do is you have to get more evidence, right? You have to accumulate more evidence. So you see the footprint, so you follow that footprint and you see another one. And then perhaps you see some other things, you see like some branches that have been broken off, this sutra talks about, or you see some scrapings on the tree that have been done by the tusks of an elephant.
Un tad, lai mēs nonāktu pie zināšanas, kas tad ir īsti atstājuši šo pēdas nospiedumu, tad mēs varam sekot šiem nospiedumiem tālāk, nonākt pie vēl kāda tikpat liela, un bez tā vēl redzēt kaut kādas nolaustas zars vai iekrāpējums kokos.
So you keep on accumulating evidence, more and more evidence, until eventually, when you keep on following the footprint, eventually you see that elephant sitting there on the ground, walking about, or lying down, or whatever.
Un tad mēs turpinām vākt pierādījumus, lai varētu būt droši par to, ka tos tiekam ir atstājis kāds milzīgs zilonis, un beidzot, ja mēs turpinām sakot visām atstātajām pēdām, tad mēs varam ieraudzīt arī pašu nozīmo zilonu kaut kur Budam.
And then only when you actually see that elephant, then you know, okay, this is a large bull elephant.
Un tikai tad, kad mēs ieraugām pašu šo zilonu, mēs varam skaidri teikt un zināt, ka tas tiešām ir milzīgs zilonis.
And it's the same thing with Buddhism. And this shows you something about how we know things in the Buddhist teachings. It's exactly the same thing here. You may come to a beautiful sutta. You may perhaps you see an inspiring teacher somewhere. All these things are evidence that there might be something there. But you cannot come to the conclusion on that basis that there is something profound going on.
Un tas pats parādās arī mums saskaroties ar Buddhismu. Protams, mēs varam izlasīt kādu jauku Buddhismu tekstu, satikt kādu iedvesmojošu Buddhismu skolotāju, un tas mums var norādīt, ka te patiešām ir kaut kas vērtīgs, bet mēs nevaram par to būt droši uzreiz.
So the Buddhist theory of knowledge is that, yes, okay, you then have some confidence, you see something which seems right, so confidence arises in you, then as a result of that confidence, you then start the practice, which are a result of that confidence, and then gradually, stage by stage, you follow through this practice until the time comes when you also have these profound experiences that are enough to convince you that there is something here.
Un tas pats notiek arī mūsu praksē, ka mēs gūstam zinām pārliecību balstoties uz šiem sākotnējiem faktiem, kas ir mūsu rokā, bet tad turpinot praktizēt, mēs pakāpeniski nonākam pie šīm dziļākajām lietām, kas mums tiešā veidā pierāda, ka tur ir tas, ko mēs domājām.
And then when you have that same insight, the same understanding that the Buddha had, only then do you know that the teaching is correct.
Un tikai tad, kad mēs paši spējam pieredzēt un izjust to, ko pieredzēja Buda, tad mēs zinām, ka tur ir tas, ko mēs redzējām.
This is a very, I think, important difference between Buddhism, early Buddhism, and most other religions, if you like.
Un tā šķiet ir viena no būtiskākajām atšķirībām, kā pastāv starp šo agrīno budismu un vairumu no religijām.
In Buddhism, we accept that in the beginning, we are acting on confidence. We are acting on faith, if you like. I prefer the word confidence. We are acting on faith. And because we know it is faith, we don't care so much if other people challenge us. It's okay to challenge us.
Un tādā praksas sākumā mēs izmantojam, zinām, paļaušanos un ticību, un tā kā tas tā ir, mēs sevišķi neuztraucamies par to, ja kāds mums izaicina.
As long as you only have confidence in something, you could be wrong, right? So if you could be wrong, if other people challenge you, maybe they have a point.
Un tādējādi, ja mēs saprotam, ka mums vēl ir šī ticība vai zinām, drošība par to, tad ja mēs esam kaut kādus pieņēmumus izvirzījuši, tad tas, ka kāds var apstrīdēt mūsu pieņēmumu pareizību, tas ir tikai dabīgi.
And it's a very kind of freeing thing. You feel very free about it. If somebody challenges you, okay, it doesn't really matter. It's not an important thing here. Because you understand that you haven't got those grounds for certainty, regardless.
Un tādējādi mēs saprotam, ka mēs vēl neesam nonākuši līdz tiem pamatiem, kas liktu mums droši zināt to, ko mēs vēlamies. Mēs šobrīd darbojamies uz pieņēmumiem un tādējādi tos ir iespējams citiem arī apkārst.
So we make a distinction in Buddhism between confidence on the one hand and true real knowledge on the other hand.
Un tādējādi Buddhismā tiek veikt šī dalīšana starp pārliecību un patiesu tiešu pieredzi un zināšanā.
So keep that in mind. If you keep that in mind, it actually is quite freeing, it's quite nice to understand that distinction, because it means that you are much more at ease with the whole teaching of Buddhism or the teaching of anything whatsoever.
Un tad dar paturēt prātā šo dalījumu un atšķirības tikai pārliecību un tieši zināšanu, jo tas palīdz brīvāk uztvert.
Okay, so let's have a look now at how the Buddha, how this gradual training actually works. How you gradually move along, if you like, you move along the footprints and you start to understand his teachings. Let's see how it works.
Un tagad tiešā veidā palasīsim, kā tas tiek izklātīts, kā notiek šī pakāpeniskā došanās pie arī dziļām un tiešā redzēšanas līdzi.
Yeah. So I'm going to start a little bit further down, Edgar. I'm not going to start at the beginning, because I'm going to start where it says Sotri Brahman here at the Tathagata appears in the world. Can you see that? Yeah, okay. So that's where I'm going to start off. Okay, so this is how the gradual training is described in Buddhism. And this is probably one of the most important suttas, one of the most important frameworks in all the suttas. And the reason why it is so important is because it occurs so many times. It occurs again and again and again. So what that means is that the Buddha must have taught it very often and very regularly.
Un šī ir viena no būtiskākajām sutām, kas sniedz šo prakses rāmi vai pārskatu, jo tā parādās, es noteikti bieži, tas nozīmē, ka Buddha to bieži mācīs.
So if you want to understand what are the important teaching in the suttas, you have to ask yourself, what did the Buddha teach often? That must be the most important part.
Un ja mēs vēlamies saprast, kas bija būtiskākais un svarīgākais Buddhas mācībā, tad ir jāatrod, par ko Buddha mācījis biežāk un ko viņš visvairāk atkārtoja. Tas ir tas svarīgākais.
Okay, so this is how it goes. Sotri Brahman, here a Tathagata appears in the world, accomplished, fully awakened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of the worlds, incomparable leaders of persons to be tamed, teachers of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. He declares this world with its gods, its Maras and its Brahmas, this generation with its recluses and Brahmins, its princes and its people, which he has himself realized with direct knowledge. He teaches the Dhamma, good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing. And he reveals a holy life that is utterly perfect and pure.
Mēs lasām to rinko, kas ir ciparu skaita 11. Tā arī Brahmini, tas āgata, būtu parādās pasaulē. Visu paveikušais pilnībā apgaismots teicams patiesās zināšanās un nevainojams uzvedībā. Cildēts pasaules zinātājs, nepārspējams vadītājs apmācāmiem cilvēkiem, dievu un cilvēku skolotājs, apgaismots svētīts. Viņš dar mums zināt šo pasauli ar tās dieviem, mārām un brāmām, šo paudzi ar tās vientuļniekiem un brāmīniem, tās prinčiem un tās ļaudīm, kur viņš pats izprats savu tiešām nepastarpinātām zināšanām. Viņš māca tam, kas ir labi sākumā un vidū un beigās ar pareizo nozīmi un izteiksmi, un viņš atklāja svētu dzīvi, kas ir pilnīgi nevainojama un dzīve.
Okay. So this part, what we're seeing right here, the first very line there, from Tathagata appears in the world to enlightened and blessed. That part there is part of the standard recollection you hear, the recollection of the Buddha that you will hear in any Buddhist country. This is that particular part. So this is, I don't know if some of you may have heard this chanting. The chanting is Itipiso Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddho Vichara Charana Sampanno. This is a standard recollection. And the purpose of this recollection, if you use this recollection wisely, it gives you a sense of who the Buddha actually was. And if you really understand who the Buddha was, it gives you a sense of, again, a sense of happiness in a way, that there is such a being in the world.
Konkrētā daļa, kas apraksta, būtu vai definē viņu, tas palīdz mums saprast, kas viņš bija un kāda bija viņa nozīme.
So thinking about these things in the right way, if you think about it in the right way, it actually becomes another tool to use in the meditation practice.
Un ja mēs spējam to pārdomāt pareizā veidā, tad tas kļūst par vēl vienu rīku mūsu meditācijas praksē.
So the first thing here, it says that a Tathagata appears in the world. It sounds a little bit, perhaps, when you read it like that, it sounds almost like a bit mystical. But actually, the meaning of this is simply that a person somewhere actually makes a breakthrough to understand things as they actually are.
Un tad teksta daļa tāpēc parādās pasaulē. Mums varētu šis nedaudz pat mistiskam, bet viss, ko tas nozīmē, ir, ka kāds cilvēks ir spējis izrauties savā izpratnē tik tālu, lai spētu uztvert, kā viss pastāv.
And the point here is that the Tathagata or Buddha is an ordinary person, just like everybody else.
Un tas, ko tas nozīmē, ka faktiski Tathagata sākotnē var būt jebkurš parasts cilvēks.
It's just that for some reason he has done the right, he, maybe she perhaps as well, has done the right thing, so that he has been able to make that breakthrough and see the world as it actually is.
Un tas nozīmē, ka šis cilvēks, viņš vai viņa, ir darījis pareizās nepieciešamās lietas, lai varētu sasniegt šo izrāvienu un spēt saredzēt lietas, kādas skatās pastāv.
So it is a natural process. It has happened every now and again. In like, if you look at world history in a very large perspective, every now and again, there will be somebody who has the right qualities, who will be able to make that breakthrough.
Un tas notiek ik pa laikam, un ja mēs spējam palūkoties uz pasaules vēsturi plašākā skatījumā, tad mēs redzam, ka ik pa laikam parādās kāda persona, kas ir spējusi ar savām īpašībām panākt to, ka tā spēja uztvert pasauli tieši.
So every now and again there will be a person who is able to make that breakthrough. A purely natural process. And because it is a natural process, there's nothing supernatural or strange about this. It's just how the world works in a way.
Un tā, ka tas notiek laiku pa laikam, kā kāds sasniedz šo izrāvienu, tas ir tīri dabisks process un tas nav nekas pārdabisks.
So a Tathagata appearing in the world, a Tathagata then is somebody who sees the world as it actually is. And this is what is really important here, the idea of seeing the world as it actually is. Because the problem is that if you don't understand the world as it actually is, you're going to make wrong decisions, right? It's a bit like, you can imagine yourself, you want to invest some money on the stock market, but all the information you have is wrong. So because all the information you have is wrong, you will invest the money on the wrong stock. Because you invest on the wrong stock, the stock market goes down. And before you know it, you've lost half the money you invested.
Un tātad nozīmē, kāds, kas spēj uztvert pasauli tiešā, pareizā, īstā veidā, un ja cilvēks to nespēj, tas faktiski ir pielīdzināms tam, ka faktiski mēs nepārtraukti saņemam tikai nepatiesu informāciju, lai ieguldītu naudu kaut kādās akcijās, un šīs nepareizās, neatbilstošās informācijas dēļ mums ieguldītā nauda aiziet pa vējiem, jo akciju vērtība krītās un attiecīgi mēs esam ieguldījuši nepareizajā vietā.
And it's exactly the same thing in life, right? If you invest your all your intentions, if you invest your life in the wrong way, you know, if you do all the wrong things, you're not going to get the results that you want.
Un līdzīgi arī mūsu dzīvē, ja mēs savus resursus un nolūkus ieguldām nepareizajās vietās un lietās, tad mēs būsim faktiski arī zaudējuši vai nebūs pareizi izrīkojušies ar savu dzīvi.
But when you see the world clearly, when someone sees the world clearly, then you have a chance to act on that clear information, and then you can do what is right, or what is wise, what will actually give the good results.
Bet ja kāds spēj uztvert pasauli pareizā veidā, tad balstoties uz šo informāciju, mēs varēsim pieņemt gudrus pareizus lēmumus.
So this is why a Buddha is so important, right? Because the idea of Buddha means somebody who is awake, somebody who has seen the world for what it actually is. That's why this idea is so important, because then it gives the chance for other beings to understand and see things as they actually are.
Un tāpēc Buddha ir ļoti svarīgs, jo viņš ir spējis ieraudzīt pasauli tādu, kāda tā ir patiesībā, un tādējādi viņš spēj palīdzēt pie tā nonākt arī citām formām.
The Buddha is in a sense like the arising of right view, of right understanding here. So right view comes into existence. That's what it means that the Buddha arises in the world. Right view comes into existence, and when that right view comes into existence, it can be shared with all other beings.
Un faktiski Buddha nozīmē kā tāds materializējies pareizais redzējums vai skatījums, un kad kāds spēj pareizi redzēt un saskatīt, tad ir iespējams ar šos pareizo redzējumu skatījumu dalīties arī ar citiem.
That's why the Buddha is sometimes called the eye of the world, right? He's the eye of the world because he sees. And because he sees, he can pass it on to other people. The eye of the world, that's what the Buddha is.
Un tāpēc Buddha reizēm tiek saukts arī par pasaules aci, jo viņš redz un viņš spēj dalīties ar redzēto arī ar citiem.
The idea of awakening is in the suttas, it's often it's compared to the idea of turning on the light, right? Before you were in darkness, now you are in light. That's one way it is explained.
Un suttās šī apskaidrība vai apgaismība nereti tiek salīdzināta gaismas ieslēgšanai. Proti, iepriekš mēs bijām tumsā un tagad iedegās gaisma un mēs esam gaismā.
Another way that the idea of awakening is explained is like being a chicken. When you're a chicken inside the shell, inside the egg, and everything is very confined, you can't see, you don't know what's going on. And it's like breaking out of the shell, and suddenly you can see the world for the first time.
Un cits veids, kā tiek salīdzināta, aprakstīta apgaismība vai apskaidrība, ir, ka mēs esam kā mazs cālēns, kas ir olā, kas tikko izlaužas no olas un spēj no šīs šaurās, ļoti ierobežotās vietas nokļūt brīvībā.
So this is the idea of the Tathagata, the Buddha appearing in the world.
Un tas ir tas, ko nozīmē, ka Tathagata, Buddha parādās pasaulē.
So the interesting thing here, of course, is that this whole gradual training, the whole path of Buddhism, depends on the Tathagata arising in the world. This is the very first step. Without that, there is no training at all, basically.
Un faktiski visas prakses pakāpeniskais ceļš ir atkarīgs no tā, ka pasaulē ir parādījies kāds apskaidrots cilvēks.
So very important that the very idea that, you know, Buddha actually has to rise for even this training to come into existence. The Buddha is like the existence of a Buddha is the foundation for that thing to be possible.
Tādējādi tas arī parādās sākumā, ka ir nepieciešams, lai pasaulē būtu parādījies Buddha, lai vispār būtu iespējams šāds pakāpenisks ceļš.
So, it then has the next word here is accomplished. The word accomplished in Pali is arahant, the word arahant.
Nākošais vārds ir visu pabeigušais un pali valodā tas skan kā arhants.
And the word arahant, actually the meaning of that word is somebody who is like worthy, somebody who is deserving. Yeah.
Un burtiskais tulkojums vārdam arhants pali valodā ir kāds, kas ir cieņas vērts.
Why are they worthy? And the reason they are worthy, or why they are deserving, yeah, what they are worthy of things like respect, right? They're worthy of our generosity, they're worthy of being listened to. Because if somebody has right view about something, if somebody understands the world as it actually is, and somebody has the ability to impart that to you, so that you can act in accordance with that to reduce your suffering and increase your happiness, then they have like the key, the secret to the meaning of life.
Un kāpēc viņi ir cieņas vērti, bet tikai kā ko viņi ir vērti. Viņi ir pelnījuši mūsu cieņu, mūsu derību, viņi ir pelnījuši, lai mēs viņos ieklausāmies. Un kāpēc viņi ir to pelnījuši? Tāpēc, ka viņi ir tie, kas spēcniek mums atslēgu uz atdzīvošanos.
So if somebody has the secret, if somebody has the answer to that, what you're really looking for, yeah, if they really have that, then that is really worthy of respect, right? It's really worthy of honor, it's really worthy of support, and worthy of listening to and taking as your teacher. Yeah.
Un, ja kādam ir tā atbilde uz noslēpumu vai jautājumu, kas mums ir, tad viņi ir pelnījuši mūsu cieņu.
So that is the idea of arahant. Then you have the idea of fully awakened, appears in the world, arahant, fully awakened. And fully awakened is this thing I was talking about before, having understood and seen the world as it actually is.
Nākošā frāze ir pilnīgi apgaismots, o tas atkal attiecās uz to, ko es iepriekš aprakstīju par spēju un pilnīgi uztvert to, kas pastāv.
Perfect in true knowledge and conduct. True knowledge is here is different from ordinary knowledge. Ordinary knowledge is the thing you get by reading books, right? You get knowledge about this, knowledge about that, knowledge about, you know, the geography of the countries in the world, knowledge about mathematics or engineering or whatever it is. But this is knowledge of a very different type. This is like a deep existential knowledge that has to do with who we are as human beings.
Nākošā frāze ir teicams patiesās zināšanās un patiesa zināšanas šeit tiek pretsatīts parastajām zināšanām, ko mēs iemācāmies skolā, piemēram, geogrāfijā un tā tālāk. Patiesās zināšanas ir tās, kas ir tik dzīves, kas spēj mūs padarīt brīvus.
And because it is a deep existential knowledge, because it concerns our very essence of what we are as humans, once you see that, it also affects your conduct as well, right? If you see something very profound, it should change the way you act, the way you are as a human being. And that's why the Buddha is somebody who is perfect, not just in knowledge, but also in conduct at the same time.
Un šīs dziļās zināšanas ir faktiski eksistenciālā līmenī, un šādas zināšanas spēja mainīt mūsu uzvedību, mūsu rīcību.
And this is quite important, because what that means is that it is possible, at least to some extent, to just judge somebody by their external behavior.
Un tas ir ļoti skatā ziņā, ka vismaz kaut kādā mērā varam spriest par citiem arī pēc viņa ārējās rīcības.
If somebody truly is awakened, if somebody truly is a Buddha, if somebody is enlightened, it will affect how they act. So it's possible if you have any doubts about somebody's spiritual attainments, about somebody's spiritual qualifications, one of the most important ways of deciding that is to look at them and look at their conduct.
Un tādējādi, ja kāds ir patiešām sasniedzis apskaitījumu apgaismību, tad mēs to varam saredzēt kaut kādā mērā arī caur viņa darbībām, jo tās darbības, ko viņš veiks, arī pastāstīs par to, kādu līmeni viņš ir sasniedzis.
And so what you have to look for is if somebody is awakened, they don't have any anger, right? They don't have any greed. What they have is the opposite. They have endless generosity, they have endless kindness, they have endless compassion, and of course they also have wisdom.
Un tādējādi, ja kāds ir sasniedz sapskaidrību, viņš nedusmosies, viņš nebūs alkatīgs, un viņām būs viss tieši pretējā skalas galā, proti, viņi būs maksimāli devīgs, laiknis, līdzjūtīgs, un viņām būs arī izkopa gudrība.
And this, of course, is very important, because what it means is that there is a way of knowing, there is a way of knowing whether somebody actually has something. If that wasn't the case, then it would be impossible for the Buddha to teach other people.
Un tas ir ļoti svarīgi, jo tas nozīmē, ka ir kāds veids, kādā mēs varam atšķirt un pazīt, vai kāds ir tiešām sasniedzis kaut ko vai nē, jo pretējā gadījumā mums nebūtu iespējas saprast.
So you can use that also in your present life if you want to decide. You know, sometimes we always ask the question, how do you know whether somebody is enlightened? How do you know whether somebody has profound wisdom? And this is how you know. So it's always good to judge these things, to look at people, to see whether they are acting in the right way, doing the right thing. And this is how you can make some sort of preliminary judgment about whether somebody is really who they claim to be, or whether they are a teacher who really has the has that insight which the Buddha also had.
Un tāpēc, ja mums dzīvē rodas kaut kādi jautājumi par to, vai es varu paļauties uz šo skolotāju, vai viņš ir tas, par ko viņš uzdodās, tad tas ir tas, ko mēs varam izmantot. Mēs varam novērtēt viņa uzvedību, viņa rīcību, jo tas dod mums tādu zināmu skaidrību un priekšnovērtējumu, kas var liecināt par to, kāda ir viņa sasniegšana vai nav.
So knowledge and conduct always goes together here.
Tātad gudrība un rīcība vienmēr iet roku rokā.
Then it says here, the Buddha is sublime, and again the idea of sublime is something which is very elevated, something very noble, something very beautiful.
Un atkal tiek izmantots tālāk vārds cildens, un tas atkal apraksta kaut kā ļoti vērtīgu un augstu.
Like the highest kind of human being, right?
Faktiski tādu cilvēciskās būtības augstāko līmeni.
Then we have the knower of the worlds. And the knower of the world, again, is just understanding how the world functions. And a large part of that, from a Buddhist point of view, is the idea of karma and rebirth.
Un tālāk ir frāze pasaules zinātājs, kā tas attiecas uz pasaules tieši uztveršanu. Un budismu izpratnē tas nozīmē arī spēju uztvert un saprast karmu un pārdzimšanu.
Of course, the idea, if you see something like rebirth, if you see that for yourself, and you see the operation of rebirth, how it functions according to the laws of karma, that actually affects you very strongly on how you relate to the world.
Un, ja mēs spējam saprast karmu un pārdzimšanu, tas ļoti spēcīgi arī ietekmē to, kā mēs attiecamies pret pasauli un kā mēs tajā darbojamies.
You understand all the possibilities of life, and you also understand the limitations of life.
Mēs saprotam pasaules tās iespējas un arī tās ierobežojumus.
So once you have that data which the Buddha has, then you can make again the right decisions according to that data.
Un kad mums ir šī data, kas saskaņā ar Buddha ir patiesa, tad mēs varam pareizi rīkoties no tiem.
And then it says the Buddha is the incomparable leader of persons to be tamed. First of all, to be tamed, I don't think is a very good translation. I think it's better to say something like tameable, so incomparable leaders of tameable persons.
Tālāk ir frāze nepārspējams vadītājs apmācāmiem cilvēkiem, un te jau ļoti prasmīgi ir ielikt vārds apmācāmiem, jo tas oriģinālā lietotais vārds drīzāk ir tuvāks cilvēkiem, kurš nepieciešams apvaldīt.
So the idea behind this, of course, again, if you have seen the way the world actually is, if you understand the world, then you have the ability to help others as well. This is the idea here.
Un te tā ideja ir tāda, ja mēs esam uztvērmuši pasauli tā, kā tā ir, tad mūsu spējās ir palīdzēt cilvēkiem.
And the idea that persons are tameable, the idea there is that there are certain people who are ready to hear a profound message, right? Certain people are able to take it to heart because they are mature enough in a spiritual way or whatever. But there are some people who are not mature enough. You can see that, you know, myself, I teach Buddhism to quite a large number of people, and most of the people who come and listen, they are interested. But there are some people who just can't get it. They're not interested. If you try to tell them about kindness, they don't even want to hear about it. So these are the sort of people who are not tameable, right, in the Buddhist sense.
Un šī atmācāmo cilvēku frāze attiecas uz to, ka ne visiem cilvēkiem varbūt ir šī spēja vai vēlēšanās uztvert to, kas tiek mācīts. Piemēram, man nāks mācīt es noteikti plašām cilvēku auditorijām un gadās par kādam cilvēkam, kurš nevēlas neko dzirdēt par laipnību vai tam līdzīgi.
And often one of the biggest problems with not being tameable is if you have like a wrong view, if you have some very strong idea, for example, you are a very staunch Muslim, or perhaps a very staunch Christian, and you believe in God. Now, if you, those kind of views are often very, very powerful, and there is no way that some people will be willing or able to let go of those views.
Ir ļoti ieciklējušies pie kaut kādiem stingriem uzskatiem, piemēram, kāds islamticīgais vai kristietis, kas ir ārkārtīgi cieši pieķēries uzskatām par Dievu un nevēlas dzirdēt pat kaut kādu citu iespēju.
So what we are taming here, we're taming the mind, right? We're bringing the mind into peace as the tame mind. That's what we mean by tameable. Yeah?
Un te faktiski tas, kā prāts tiek apmācīts, tas tiek apmācīts sasniegt mieru.
Then the second one, next one here is, I'm going to go a bit quickly because we're already running out of time, unfortunately. But the next one here is teacher of gods and humans. And this means that the Buddha does not just teach human beings, he teaches other beings as well, wherever they might be. Yeah.
Un tālāk ir Dievu un cilvēku skolotājs, tas nozīmē, ka Buda māca ne tikai cilvēku līmenī, bet arī citos.
This is actually quite an important point. Sometimes you will hear in Buddhist circles, people will say, oh, you know, you have to be careful to get reborn again as a human in your next life, because if you don't get reborn as a human, then you won't make any progress in the Dhamma practice.
Un tas ir svarīgi arī tādā ziņā, ka teikt, ka ir svarīgi piedzimt, ka cilvēkam jau pretējā gadījumā citas pārdzimšanas var liekt tālāk attīstību.
But actually, from a Buddhist, from the way the Buddha speaks, he doesn't actually say that. What he says is that, you know, you just go along with the flow. You allow the karma, whatever karma you have, you allow the karma to drive you forward in the right way. And then if you get reborn in the right place, then there will very often be Buddhist teachings available in that place.
Bet tas, ko faktiski saka Buda, ka tas gluži tā nav, jo ja mēs paļausimies uz mūsu karmu, tad mēs iespējams pārdzīvosim vietā, kur ir Dhamma, un mēs varēsim sakot mācībām.
So that is quite nice. Sometimes you get this idea as a Buddhist that you have to guide your rebirth towards a human existence, etc. But these are actually later ideas that came a long time after the Buddha.
Tas ir svarīgi, jo reizē mēs dzirdam šīs idejas par to, ka mums ir nepieciešams vadīt savu dzīvi uz cilvēku atdzimšanu, bet tās patiesībā ir idejas, kas parādījās nedaudz vēlāk pēc jau Buddhas.
And then the last two words here, enlightened and blessed.
Un tad pēdējiem divu vārdu šajā teikumā apgaismināts un sveitīts.
And I enlightened again just means awakened, just like we saw before. Yeah.
Un apgaismināts ir tas pats, kas apskaidrots.
And the last word blessed is just basically like a title. It's Bhagavan Pali, like a title that is given to somebody who is like a special spiritual teacher. Yeah.
Un sveitīts faktiski ir tituls Bhagavan Pali valodā, kas tiek, ar ko tiek atzīmēts, kāds, kas ir īpašs.
Okay, good. That's more than enough problem already. So let's take another break and do some meditation and have a bit of tea and then we'll see you back here again later on.
Un tā kā šeit mēs sakām, varam likt daudz punkti un tā turpināt meditēt, lai man te teiktu, un tad jau kaut kā šeit tiksim.